Well, this is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown, and I feel very privileged today because this morning I attended Grandparents' Day at my grandson's Te Aroti Primary School. It's his first few months after turning five, and they had a packed program there and a beautiful morning tea, and Monty, my grandson, was thrilled to have me there, and I was able to help out with some of the sort of team sports and games that they entertained the grandparents with. And there was a huge turnout of grandparents. Great to see such support, and what a wonderful community the Te Aroti community is, and I think that's reflected in this lovely little school. Well, Take It From Us is brought to you and funded by Ember Wellbeing Trust. And, of course, we've got technician Declan Curran doing all the production and working out the music. So today we promise to talk about New Zealand's first suicide prevention office. Opened officially last week, and it will drive action to save lives. It will confront a shameful suicide toll which is rising yearly and doesn't look like reversing. So will this new initiative make a difference? Before I try and answer that, let's look at the lead-up to the opening of the new suicide prevention office in terms of what the government has been doing in mental health and trying to boost funding and boost services. There's no doubt that the government is taking the nation's mental health seriously, and little wonder, because it was in a dire state during the years of the national government. This focus by the new government is long overdue. So what has happened so far? Well, we've had the government's inquiry into mental health and addiction, which resulted in the government embracing 38 of the 40 recommendations which was made by the inquiry panel. One of those recommendations was to set up the Suicide Prevention Office, which we're looking at today. One that wasn't adopted is setting a suicide reduction target, which many mental health advocates believe is imperative. So we'll have a bit more about that a little later in the show. Then there was the announcement of the wellbeing budget, with a budget for mental health of $1.9 billion. That's an impressive spend on mental health. The Suicide Prevention Office was announced as an initiative in September, and its director, Carla Nagara, appointed some time later. At the opening last week, she described our suicide toll as shameful and added that the office was not about the opening of bricks and mortar, but about a shared commitment to lowering our suicide rate. Let's look at what Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said at the opening of the Suicide Prevention Office. She very pointedly brought a personal touch to her speech.
And I have that right here, which I'm about to look at. Where are we?
Right at the top of the page.
This one here you want, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the bottom of that one. Okay. She's reflecting on the tragic part of the PM role during Suicide Prevention Office opening. And she revealed that one of the tragic parts was receiving letters from grieving parents who have lost children due to suicide. She said, "I receive, sadly, countless letters of loss. It's not something I expected in this job, but it's something that has stood out to me." She said she mostly receives letters from family members, mothers and fathers who have lost children, and admitted she'd read one of the letters the night before her speech. And she also says she's constantly staggered that amongst all the grief and pain that she can barely fathom, those parents take the time and still use the opportunity they have to drive for change for others. They provide practical solutions and insights from their own experience, which sometimes defies the grief that she said she knows they must be experiencing. Suicide Prevention Office, of course, was announced in September as part of the government's plan to support people in distress and help bring down New Zealand's high suicide rate. The latest statistics released in August showed another increase, and in the year to June the 30th, 685 people took their own lives, 17 more than the previous year. David Clark, the Health Minister, has described the office as a crucial part of the wellbeing budget's record $1 million investment in mental health and addiction, which included $40 million on suicide prevention. Dr. Clark and Ardern also announced on Wednesday a $12 million Maori and Pacific Suicide Prevention Community Fund to be used over the next 4 years to support suicide prevention initiatives. I was just going to say in there, it is rather disturbing to see how Maori and Pacific cultures feature so highly. And so hopefully that's something they're going to look into.
Well, I think the last line in that story is that they've allocated $12 million to address Maori and Pacific suicide.
The big question is, how exactly do you go about it?
Well, that's the curly question, and I think that applies to all suicide prevention. I think it's quite interesting that the new director of the Suicide Prevention Office says that it requires a shared commitment to lowering our suicide rate. And I'll come back to you, Declan, because you told me about an item on the Sunday program just last Sunday about Matakana Island, about how there's only 200 residents there, and in fact I think they've had two suicides and a suspected suicide in the last year. So that shared commitment, it sounds as though at least one family who had moved away from Matakana Island, they'd heard about the plight of that community, and what had they decided to do?
Well, actually, that was one of the guys that had passed on. His brother and his wife and kids, they came back. So they're originally from, obviously, the island. They'd gone to live and work in Wellington and made the decision to come back, bring the family up there. They're building a home there at the moment. And being closer to family, that sort of thing with the ties. Income-wise, they generally tend to all sort of work in together, forestry. I think they've got blueberries or something like that. And the guy's wife said that she's still able to work remotely from there, and she does a couple of part-time jobs, and it's all via computer and that. So I think they'll do all right. They've got a good support system.
But Matakana Island, with its forestry and other smaller sort of enterprises, it is a Maori community predominantly. And perhaps that small microcosm of community there is indicative of the high rate of suicide among Maori.
I think the big thing they've got going for them as well is not only the fact that they are such a small number of people, but because they all, there's a good support system, and they're able to be open. And I think that's one of the things I've noticed with a lot of cultures, is that they're able to really download how they're feeling and get that sort of stuff out and share it. And they've got really strong support systems. So that's why I can't understand why we've got such high numbers of Maori and Pacific population, you know, having that issue.
Was there any, in this documentary on the Sunday program last Sunday, was there any mention of mental health support and services that were supporting the Matakana Island community?
I didn't really see anything there that sort of flagged to me. It generally just sort of focused more on the support of family and those on the island, and how they're moving in together and trying to process it and move on. And I guess that's something that, in particular, the guy's mum said, you know, it's going to be a daily thing.
So safeguarding against recurrence of this, that they talk about any strategies that they were putting in place. I mean, you mentioned, I think, to me that it is a very isolated community. It probably requires a plane or a ferry to or a boat to get there.
They seem to, from what I saw, have a barge, and there were cars on that coming across. So whether or not they've got support on the main island, in Tauranga, I should say, I'm not too sure. I think from what I gained from it, they seem to be pretty much working amongst each other and sharing and communicating and that sort of thing. Whether that's enough on its own, I don't know, because you know, you can have all the support systems in the world, you can be able to communicate to people, but I wonder whether there's still that issue of I don't want to say anything because somebody's going to, you know, look at me this way or whatever.
Well, they are fearful still of discrimination and being seen to be weak and vulnerable. Yeah, well, I just ask you about that because the director of the new suicide prevention office opened last week, the first ever in New Zealand, made the comment that it wasn't about opening bricks and mortar, but about a shared commitment to lowering our suicide rate. And it just sounded as though in that small community of Matakana Island, where these people had moved back from Wellington to support their family who had been impacted by the suicides, that might be an example of shared commitment.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the family realised that being so far away and not being able to visit the family, I think it brought home to them how important those family ties were, to the point where they're actually in the process of building their own house there and resettling. And coming from a country background, which is probably totally different to an island as such, I know that we pretty much knew everybody. I grew up in Albany when it was a country town. And we knew all the families, we connected. If you got up to any mischief, it soon got back to your parents, so you didn't have to worry about the cops. You got a swift boot up the, you know, when you got back in.
Yeah, well let's take our first music break on Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. What have you got, Dick?
Well, I gave you a snip from last week from Ollie Muirs. He's put out a brilliant album, and it's called 24 Hours. If you want, go onto YouTube, have a listen to it. I like all the tracks. This is one I gave you a background snippet of last week. It's a song called Flaws, and it's about his splitting up from his girlfriend and how he's blamed himself. But I think you can actually take the song and you can apply it in some way to mental health and what you're going through and how you feel. So hopefully it brings something to you. And, of course, you're listening to Take It From Us Mental Health Radio. We're broadcasting here live every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30 on 104.6 Planet FM, and here's Ollie Muirs with Flaws.
I got flaws I can't disguise. I've been running from them all my life. On the surface, I'm all smiles, but I'm only living half a life. Stuck behind the glass and the walls are closing in. Stuck inside a past that won't let me leave. But I'm in chains while you're breaking free. Stuck behind the glass and I'm waiting for your call. Nothing ever lasts for a prisoner. I'm in chains while you're breaking free. And it's killing me. I got flaws I can't disguise. And you try to pull me to the light. I can't go back and make it right. Stuck behind the glass and the walls are closing in. Stuck inside a past that won't let me leave. But I'm in chains while you're breaking free. Stuck behind the glass and I'm waiting for your call. Nothing ever lasts for a prisoner. And I'm in chains while you're breaking free. And it's killing me. We were never born to make it out of this alive. When we were never born to make it, how could we survive? Stuck behind the glass and the walls are closing in. Stuck inside a past that won't let me leave. And I'm in chains while you're breaking free. Stuck behind the and it's killing me.
Well, I'm host Sheldon Brown on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, with Declan Curran, and we're reviewing the government's initiatives in mental health and particularly in suicide prevention. So we've talked already about the government's inquiry into mental health and addiction, the wellbeing budget, recommendation to set up a suicide prevention office, which in fact was opened officially last week. The plan to spend $1.9 billion on mental health, which of course suicide prevention is allocated, I think, $40 million. So prior to that, on September the 10th, the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and Health Minister David Clark released Every Life Matters, the suicide prevention strategy for 2019 to 2029, and an action plan for Aotearoa New Zealand for the 5 years from 2019. The plan has three main focus areas: promoting well-being, responding to suicidal distress and behaviour, supporting individuals, whānau and communities after a suicide. And this, it was very positive to see the announcement of this, the release of Every Life Matters, the suicide prevention strategy and action plan, because the country had been out without a suicide prevention plan, I think, for at least 3 years. The Prime Minister said that our rate of suicide is a long-term national tragedy and has been for many years. Change will take time, but this plan and the actions the government has already in place are an important start. At the election, Jacinda Ardern said, "We promised to take mental health seriously, and we are. The Suicide Prevention Office provides a focus for the range of on-the-ground initiatives contained in the plan that it will take to reduce the number of New Zealanders taking their own life. There are no easy answers or quick fixes, but the range of actions we are taking will mean better support for people in distress, as well as rolling out new frontline mental health services in places like GP clinics. We have already started to tackle this problem with a range of initiatives underway to reduce the number of suicides, including increasing suicide prevention services within all district health boards, supporting tailored Maori and Pacific suicide prevention initiatives, funding to improve support for 15,000 people who turn up at hospital emergency departments experiencing a mental health crisis or at risk of suicide, expanding the information and resources available to family and whānau of those experiencing suicidal distress, and funding free counselling for 2,500 people each year bereaved by suicide, whom research shows can be vulnerable to suicidal thoughts themselves." So a lot happening in this area of suicide prevention, planning, strategy, and this suicide prevention office opening last week said, again, the Prime Minister said that it was a bittersweet but important moment. "The office is one of the key components of the government's $40 million investment in the wellbeing budget aimed at tackling New Zealand's high suicide rate." Ms Ardern said it was vital to bring down the country's shameful statistics. And Declan has already read the total of 685. That's to June this year, 17 more than last year. So she says that this office is about having an absolute focus on all of the complex issues that contribute to suicide and acknowledging that one death is one too many. The government also announced a $1 million Maori and Pacific Suicide Prevention Community Fund, and over the next 4 years, this will be used to support Maori and Pacific providers to design and deliver culturally responsive suicide prevention initiatives. We know Maori and Pacific, she says, are overrepresented in suicide statistics, and we need to find and support new community responses that will help change that. David Clark, the Minister of Health, believed the office would galvanise work towards reducing suicide. He says, I believe together we can and will fix this long-term challenge and make New Zealand the best place in the world to grow up and live. A country where people know there is always someone to reach out to and to get help. We want every New Zealander to know that when times get tough, if they are in distress or they reach a crisis, there is someone they can turn to for help. The Suicide Prevention Office will initially be established as a team within the Ministry of Health's Mental Health and Addiction Directorate, with the aim of eventually becoming a standalone agency. Well, let's take another music break on Take It From Us. Declan, you ready to rock and roll?
I am. That's well timed. I've just been doing a bit of research on this one. She sits alongside, I reckon, Beverly Craven, the type of music she's playing. Brenda Russell. Well, a lot of people actually say it's sung by Brenda Russell, but it's actually Brenda Russell and Joe Esposito. Won me a free meal, that one, on the first few bars on a, you know, when you had to ring in and a bump bump, you had to guess what the song was. She wrote the lyrics, and she keeps a wee song title book that she keeps everything in. And the song's about wanting to leave the person's partner or her partner, and every time he sits and plays the piano, it pulls her back in. Video set in a nightclub on a rainy night before closing time, and it's the only song that she has performed that really made an impact on the American charts, although she's had more success on the international market, basically. It was Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting every Tuesday right here, live on 104.6, Planet FM from 12:30 to 1:30. Here's Piano in the Dark from Brenda Russell.
Like it's dead. There isn't me now. I turn around and
that's a beautiful track there from Brenda Russell and Joe Esposito.
Yeah, you're on it.
Most
people don't put Joe in there, which is a bit sad because he's in there as well. Beautiful song. I love that one. Yeah. Sends a shiver down my spine.
Yeah, well, the old duet, I don't know whether that's an old-fashioned word of describing a bloke and a blokeette, but I think it's got great potential. I love
it. It's like Schweppes. Schweppes. Nice drink, too.
Well, I'm Sheldon Brown, host of Mental Health Radio Take It From Us, and we've got Declan doing all the whiz-bang things on the production board here today, as usual. We're talking today about government initiatives in mental health and the opening of the new suicide prevention office, the first ever in New Zealand. And Declan has reinforced that to the year June 30, 685 people took their own lives, 17 more than the previous year. One of the most disturbing features is the youth suicide rate, which I think is the highest in the developed world, particularly in the 15 to 19 age range, with 20 more deaths by suicide than the year before.
That used to be just a button there. Didn't it used to be 15 to 24? So has that actually narrowed down, or is that still high up to that 24?
Yeah, well, it's still high up to the 24, but they even differentiate a different age bracket between 10 and 19, where they say that 84 young New Zealanders between those ages 10 and 19 died by suicide in that 2018-19 period. 11 of them were under the age of 15.
And can I just chuck something else in there? Is we know that we want to get the results of bringing it down, but do we know what, is there any quantification of what aspects of people's lives are pushing them to that limit? You know, like what's causing that initial thing? Is it to do with schoolwork, peer pressure, bullying, you know,
social media?
Yeah, well, I
think that was something that controversially Mike King wanted to get hold of. He wanted to get hold of letters from people who had committed suicide, and he's got a lot of backlash from that. And I think, in fact, the Ministry of Health has formally requested that he doesn't continue to seek that information.
Isn't that interesting, though, because that helps reinforce a stigma? Because when a death occurs, say, for road accidents, that it's put out there and everybody knows about it. But if you're not going to talk about, you know, how that person was feeling or what contributed to that, how can we actually get to the roots and pull them out?
Well, I think Mike King was trying to get to the roots of this sort of information, but many people in mental health felt that this would fan the fire of despair and grief from those loved ones left behind.
But that actually just brings me to another thought, is just because you see race car drivers hooning around a racetrack doesn't mean you're going to go out on the road and do 200 kilometres an hour. So to actually tell people, hey, this is what's contributing to this, I see as being a tool, because then some teenagers and those others at risk may say, hey, I can relate to that. Yeah, that's a good point. That then means that rather than trying to stop the water flowing down, you can turn the tap at the top and deal with it before it becomes a problem. Mm. And if you're going to have that stigma and everything else, how are the youth of today, with no doubt huge pressures compared with when we were growing up, how are they going to ever open up and deal with this if they've still got that, oh, I can't talk, it's bad, no one will give me the information? So if you tell the youth you can't talk about something, or more importantly, we're not going to talk about it, we don't want to talk about it, how the hell are they going to open up and talk about it?
Well, I think we have a national tendency to not open up about these things. Certainly in discussions that I have, suicide never comes up. Maybe the road toll comes up a little bit more, probably more so the traffic congestion in Auckland. I was in discussion with some colleagues of mine at tennis yesterday, and we were talking about some relatively serious issues, and somebody butted in and said, well, look, I've had enough of this. Let's try and find something positive, something fun. And, you know, I think that that's the tendency with Kiwis, that we don't want to know. We've got our heads in the sand, and this is something that I want to get onto as part of our discussion or a part of our review of suicide prevention. We have talked about the increase in the suicide rate among Maori and Pacific people. The Maori suicide total increased from 142 to 169, so that's in a 25 further deaths than that period, 218 to 219. The Pacific suicide rate went from 23 to 34. There was a nominal drop in the European suicide rate, down from 462 deaths to 446. So over the years from 2007 through to this year, the suicide rate has been steadily increasing at a rate of about 10% a year. Now, Sean Robinson, the chief executive of the Mental Health Foundation, called the findings of the release of the suicide statistics as a really horrendous result. The time has passed to raise awareness of suicide, he told the media. We now need to raise awareness of suicide prevention and what is working. So, what's my view? My opinion is that New Zealand has a sinister and intimidating underbelly, which is fueled by drugs, especially meth, alcohol, which is rife in almost every age group, homelessness, hopelessness, and poverty. It's staggering to me that police are called to a domestic violence incident in New Zealand every 5 minutes. I read this morning that there have been 9 homicides in Whanganui in the past 2 years, with worried residents flooding on the streets looking for answers. What is the backstory to those families and loved ones impacted by those 9 homicides? We don't always know. But we got some clear insights with the shooting of a man in Tauranga by police last week. He had 2 young children locked up with him in the house in Tauranga, either at knife or machete point, holed up in this house for 14 hours. The police were left with no option than to gun him down to save those children. Imagine the terror and fear of those children. How will they ever recover from someone they may have trusted, at least superficially, turning on them with such violence? And the backstory here, the mother was interviewed about her former partner who'd wreaked havoc on her children. She was speaking from prison after being jailed for a significant time. Meth was a very pervasive in this story, as was horrific domestic violence on the wife. Aren't the two linked, the meth and the domestic violence? Perhaps, Declan, the meth it could also be linked to our higher suicide rates. Other court cases have shed light on this New Zealand underbelly in the last 2 weeks. The murder by a Dunedin doctor of a teenager when she threatened to expose his lifestyle with teenagers with the booze and the underage sex that he sought. In this case, the girl's mother was suspected to have committed suicide after her daughter's murder. And in that circumstance, it was a family member who only, I think, minutes after the murder had occurred, went into the room and found the daughter. I'm reluctant to mention the Grace Mullane murder, the influence of social media in that case, and the antics of her murderer in terms of accessing porn soon after Grace's death and dating another woman the next day. It just seems to me that these sorts of revelations that are coming out of our courtrooms currently are not the norm that we've come to expect in New Zealand. But perhaps it sheds light on why our suicide rate is so high. What also contributes, in my view, is how little Kiwis talk about these shatteringly tragic events. It's like nothing's going on. It's head in the sand. And don't dare mention anything that might disrupt my perfect life of ignorance and bliss. As I said the other day, it only takes a challenge to many Kiwis, and many of them fire up. Look at our behaviour on the road. It doesn't take much for road rage to occur. And bullying on the road is too. And why is bullying so rife in our workplaces, in our schools, in almost every aspect, even on the sidelines of sports fields, where parents get so involved and so enraged that they attack the referee? So why is bullying so rife? For me, it comes down to lack of self-esteem and self-confidence. The insecurity that seems to be, well, bred into us Kiwis. These factors explain to me why we drink so much in this country. Booze gives us a quick fix of courage and confidence, and suddenly we are all supermen or superwomen. So pretty quickly there's a vicious cycle, and it's my view that suicide quickly gets caught up in that spiral. So what's the solution? For me, it's adopting more compassion and connection. It's about trying to create a shared commitment to look out for other people. Whether that's going to happen in our current community, I have my doubts. I think social media, I think our phones are just cutting us off from other people. It's a spectacle to me every time I draw the blinds in the morning to see people walking down the road with their cell phone in front of them. They're talking to their cell phone. They've got their headphones on. They are completely inaccessible.
That's funny you should say that, because when I go out on my little three-wheel sporty mobility scooter thing, had someone, young chap, coming towards me only a couple of days ago. Head down on the phone. Was only when I got about 12 feet away when I sort of went beep beep on the horn, and he looked up and nearly dropped his phone, and I thought, they're just in zombie land.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they're totally inaccessible, and I think so many people are cutting themselves off, isolating themselves, while they're actually in community, whether they're in the queue to catch the ferry to Waiheke or whether they're walking to work or whatever. I just find, and even at this grandparents' day at school, there are so many people sitting on their own, eating their food on their own, and nobody is approaching them.
Yeah,
or they're not approaching anybody else. We don't seem to have the confidence to make that first initial connection.
I think what that's doing too is, I shouldn't say it, developing a culture of Muppets in some respects, where we're looking at, well, I've resisted the urge to get a smartphone for ages, something simple, but the way I look at it now is, if that phone goes off and it's got a message or whatever, I don't have it sitting beside me, I leave it somewhere else, and I think, I'll check those messages when I want to check them, unless I'm waiting for something. Or another time to do it and be able to connect with people is, when I sit down to watch TV, like the news, for example, I'll just scroll through any emails coming in, and you know, even if you dump them off your phone, but have them still so that you can go on the computer later on and have that time one-on-one with your device so you're not married to it, basically.
Well, I think the important thing is to have the time with the person that you might be having a coffee with, having lunch with, just chatting on a park bench with, and hopefully they will ignore their phone if it goes off. But so often they give priority to their phone over their relationship with the person that they're sitting with face-to-face.
It comes down to etiquette, and I think too, when you're in somewhere like a restaurant and someone's peering at their phone, it sends a clear indication to you that I'm not interested in you, what's happening on social media is more important. Yeah. And I think what we've got to look at is,
what's more important than the here and now, because if you get solely attached to those devices, you lose the skills to interact. Yeah. And I think that that media can have such an impact on people. Is that contributing to the suicide things as well?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that there is. And, you know, I don't believe that Kiwis are great at interacting. My example today at the grandparents' morning tea, there's a whole lot of people who don't know anybody. Nobody is making an approach to other people to chat with them. We seem to be just either gormless in terms of making connection with people and checking in with them, even if we don't know them. One of the delights I find is getting on the Waiheke Ferry, and people all seem to be in a good mood. They seem approachable. They seem chatty. So often those people are tourists, of course, and they love talking to somebody who knows a little bit about Waiheke. They're looking for recommendations as to what to do on the island.
But isn't that nice, though, to be able to have the city when you want it, but be able to break away? And I think Waiheke offers that. Years ago, back in the 70s, my grandmother had a property there. Her and her sister, they had properties opposite each other, and she eventually came back from there, but it was always nice to go down until the bloody boat broke, our boat that we were going across, and broke down halfway, and we had to get towed back. So I remember that clearly.
She was pretty agricultural in those days in the 70s.
Me. Yeah.
So I think we'll take a music break. Declan, what have you got for us?
I've got one I thought particularly pertinent for today, this one that also pushes a lot of buttons for me in a good way. But it's from a Melbourne pop duo from Australia, obviously, founded in 92. Tania Doko is the vocalist and James Roche is the musician, producer and arranger. And they've actually won in the ARIA Music Awards. That's the Australian music ones that recognises excellence, innovation and achievement across all genres. They won one award from five nominations. The interesting thing about them is you can look up and research the group, and they've got a song about buses and trains, which I probably shouldn't go into what that's about here. But the Permission to Shine song that I'm going to play you now, it's not always an easy one, but it does talk about feeling down and making yourself feel better. You're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here live on 104.6 Planet FM every single Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30. Here is Permission to Shine from Bachelor Girl.
On 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Caron, and we're talking today about, well, I'd finished up talking about a possible solution by adopting more compassion and connection, thinking about others rather than self-obsessing about ourselves. Check in with people, get away from the comfortable topics of conversation and get into some emotional nitty-gritty. Perhaps the biggest issue, which is clearly impacting our next generation and our own generation, is climate change. Again, so many Kiwis I meet have a head-in-the-sand approach or are totally sceptical, are climate change sceptics. But New Zealand has the ninth longest coastline of any country in the world, which places us in a very, very vulnerable position. And as I've mentioned, I'm spending more time on Waiheke Island, and that's an island which is very vulnerable because of the clay soils there. Many of the beaches are being eroded away throughout and around the island. So you know, I've been reading about places like South Dunedin, which are regularly underwater because South Dunedin was built on a swamp, and the water table apparently is only a few millimetres or centimetres below ground level. There are traumatic effects on the lives of at least 12,000 residents there, and many are very vulnerable. They are people who rent, who may have mental health or disability issues. It's recognised as a community of vulnerability. There are also warnings about the impact of sea level rises around Wellington, parts of Petone, and ask residents of Carter's Beach near Westport or parts of the coastline at Pai Kokoriki or Port Waikato how they're feeling about climate change and the vulnerability of their homes and their communities. In Port Waikato, some residents have been refused the chance to move houses back from a rapidly receding escarpment. They've either got to move their houses completely or abandon them. So impact on their mental health? Well, I'd say so. Getting our suicide rate down in the face of these challenges, I'm somewhat doubtful. It seems to me like the horse has bolted. And I am a little sceptical about Prime Minister Ardern's reluctance to have a target. I think Mike King, the mental health advocate, was very keen to have a 20% reduction per year, and that was one of the reasons why he left the committee who was planning the next strategy on suicide prevention. But Ardern is continuing to push back on the prospect of setting a suicide reduction target because she believes there should be zero tolerance for suicide. We had somebody on, take it from us, from the Hawke's Bay, who has cottoned on to the idea of a zero suicide goal or strategy. That at this current, in this current climate and with the challenges that New Zealand is facing, I think is probably pie in the sky. Ardern says, I think for us it's just a moral question. Will anyone ever be satisfied with anyone losing their lives in our communities? And the answer is no. I really push back on the idea that the only way we're ever going to know if we're successful is if we set in place an arbitrary target. And the Minister of Health said the advice he receives on suicide prevention is that this is a complex and hard question. Well, I hope that our program today on Take It From Us has underlined just how complex and hard this issue is. I think it's a real tragedy that we are losing so many of our young people to suicide. I just can't fathom, if I go back into my teenage years of surfing and playing rugby and riding bikes around Banks Peninsula, having the absolute freedom to pretty much do what I like, but having respect for my parents and knowing that I needed to be responsible. I mean, that was a wonderful experience of growing up. And while the family may not have been tightly knit and my mother was often in an acute psychiatric unit, I still had the friendship of my peers, friends that I knew from the age of five, and what a wonderful life it was living in a small community like Sumner. And it just really upsets me that that teenagers, people between the ages of 10 and 19 are ending their lives for whatever reason. So, as the Minister of Health says, we have to accept that we're not going to get to zero suicides overnight. We need to have zero tolerance for suicide. And I hope that my message about Kiwis getting out and talking to each other and talking about more significant and relevant issues than just what restaurant they went to lately or what cafe they would recommend. So that's my view. Declan, we got time for another track?
I'll put a track on underneath like we did last time, because this is one here called What About Us by Pink. And I just wanted to throw a couple of things in at you. Is with the suicide rate, the question I have too is, is it that people are having difficulties only with what they're dealing with now? Or in the case of youth, is it what the hell does my future hold and the anxiety of that?
Well, I think there is a lot of anxiety around the world's future, the change in climate, the threat that climate change has on their lives. And it's probably youth that are leading the demonstration and the pressure and the protest on our generation to see that they make changes. The UN Secretary General said that we've got very little time left to change our carbon economy and try and reduce carbon levels. And the most disturbing thing is that the carbon levels are higher this year than they have ever been. So
yeah, and we've got a couple of minutes left, but I was just going to read a few things here. That the Mental Health Foundation develops information resources to support people who are worried about their own suicide risk or suicide risk of someone close to them. There is one number that's very easy to remember, and you can talk or text this. It's 1737 anytime. 1737 to talk to a trained counsellor, and of course Lifeline is available on 0800 543354, just in case you're in a bad space there or know someone that is and you need help on that. But of course, if it's an emergency, go straight for 111 for ambulance. The information services that are out there, there's plenty of places that you can go to. There's Lifeline, there's a suicide prevention helpline, 0508 828 865. Youthline, very, very pertinent, free text 234 or 0800 376 633. I'm going to read that again because of the high numbers of youth. That's 0800 376 633. Or free text 234. And I think the other thing I'd put in there too is it's always a good idea, I think, if you've got a really good friend or even a relative that you can really confide in that isn't going to judge you and is just going to sit there and listen and give you support. I think sometimes that's all people need, is to be able to offload in an environment that's safe, that doesn't make them feel threatened, maybe, doesn't make them feel like they're going to be judged, because the last thing that people need is for someone to be judging them or telling them what to do. It's
well,
very important.
Especially giving advice, I think listening, that's the crucial positive thing that you can do, is listen to somebody, be patient with them. But all that information that Declan has just mentioned is on the Mental Health Foundation's website, mentalhealth.org.nz.
And that's pretty much us for the week, I think. So have a good one. And it looks like a bit of rain up here in Auckland at the moment. But enjoy your week. We will see you next Tuesday as per normal.
As per normal.
Alrighty, have a good one, guys.